a Minnesota studio would do them good. Maybe fewer distractions would produce more work. The Cannibals went along with the scheme because they wanted to work with Prince, the owner of the Chanhassen studio, Paisley Park. Only he wasn't available, but his studio was, and so was one of Prince's local producers, David Z. He listened to their demos. One stood out. She's My Baby. That wasn't one of their best ones, they said. So they gave it a shot, with David Z creating the bedrock snare drum loop. When the album was released in 1989, the Fine Young Cannibals would get their first American number one hit with that song, now renamed She Drives Me Crazy.
MN90 is produced by Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities. Made possible by funding from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Online at mn90.org.
From the Two Buffalo Studios in Bradenton, Florida, welcome to Indigenous in the News. We'll be bringing you current updates that affect us all, from the Shakers and the Makers in Indian Country. I'm your host, Larry Kay from the Ho-Chunk Nation, along with Gary Wilcox from the Powhatan Nation. On today's show, we welcome from Carlsbad, New Mexico, entrepreneur Yolanda Martinez. She stays busy and has crossed many roads, including author, singing, painting, and drum making, and was one of the first women to work on a commercial fishing boat in Kodiak, Alaska. Today she's here to tell us all about her journey and talk about her new book, Following Earth, Mother's Heartbeat, The Memoirs of Yolanda. All this and more, but first, the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A series of remembrances for President Jimmy Carter begins Saturday in Georgia. Next Thursday, there will be a national day of mourning. But as KMBA's Rhonda McBride tells us, there are also reflections about the president's lasting impacts on Alaska.
President Jimmy Carter was known in southeast Alaska as Nahuwu. The Deshiton clan of Angoon gave him that name when it adopted him sometime in the late 1970s. The Thlinkit name belonged to Billy Jones, a 13-year-old who witnessed the bombardment of Angoon by the U.S. Navy in 1882. His account was the basis for an apology to the village the Navy Secretary made this past October, more than 140 years later. Rosita Worrell, president of the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, says President Carter took one of the first steps to heal the trauma.
He was the first president, actually, that listened to their story.
Angoon is on Admiralty Island, which in 1978, Carter turned into a national monument. Then in 1980, added more environmental safeguards through the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act. ANILCA also doubled the size of Alaska's national parks and refuges and set aside more than 50 million acres as wilderness. For Alaska Natives, ANILCA added more protections for hunting and fishing, which Worrell says should have been stronger.
It's not perfect, but without it, we wouldn't have had the protections we have.
But Worrell says Carter's most important legacy was the example he set as a leader up until his death last month at the age of 100.
He cared for humanity, and he proved it by doing the work himself. That's a trait that we admire.
Worrell says Garfield George of the Deshiton will represent the Thlinkit at President Carter's memorial service in Washington, D.C. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
Cross-border governing bodies are taking steps to address mining pollution coming from Canada. Eric Tigetoff has more.
Coal mining pollution in the Kootenai River has flowed to Montana for more than a century and impacted water quality hundreds of miles downstream. Selenium is the biggest concern. It can harm fish and other wildlife at high concentrations. Tribes in the region have been at the forefront of addressing the issue. The Salish and Kootenai tribes' Tom McDonald is among those leading efforts.
It's just elevated every year, and they keep expanding and getting bigger, and the problem keeps getting worse, and it keeps moving downstream. It's affected the water course in the Kootenai River for nearly 400 miles into Montana and Idaho and then back up into Canada.
The International Joint Commission settles boundary water differences between the U.S. and Canada. It has announced the formation of a governance body to address pollution in the Kootenai River. The body will set up a cleanup plan over the next 2 years. The governance body set up to address the issue is composed of 11 governments, including tribal governments, the state of Idaho and Montana, and the Canadian province of British Columbia. McDonald says this issue comes down to the regulatory responsibility of British Columbia.
If they were just enforcing the rules and regulations that they're supposed to be doing, I don't think we would even be here today. So they haven't been doing their job, and so it's really laying more eyes on it, putting more pressure on them to enforce their rules and regulations and their mitigation packages.
The Canadian company NWP Coal is proposing a new mine in the same watershed as the existing coal mines. The company claims its project won't increase selenium contamination, but doesn't address the current pollution issue. I'm Eric Tegedoff reporting.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Educators, ready to transform Indigenous education? The NISN School Design Fellowship is accepting community letters of interest through January 31st at nacainspiredschoolsnetwork.org, who support this show.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for over 40 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Well, I'm Gary. On today's show, we welcome Yolanda Martinez, author and entrepreneur, and NAMI winner. Hi, Yolanda. How are you doing today?
Doing great, Gary. Thanks.
Where are you calling from?
Las Cruces, New Mexico.
Nice, nice.
Welcome to Indigenous in the News. Let's start with an introduction, and then we'll talk about your book, Following Earth Mother's Heartbeat, The Memoirs of Yolanda.
Oh, sounds good.
Go ahead and hit the stage, Yolanda.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
I am Yolanda from Carlsbad, born and raised there. And it's been quite the journey of my life that I guess we're going to talk about. Mm-hmm. And my accomplishments and stuff. And I'm just so happy and thrilled to be here with you guys and all our viewers.
Sure, sure. Now, when did you know you were going to be a performer? Did you start with music first?
Well, I always had music in my life. My mom was a singer.
Oh, wow. You know, okay.
And she would sing around Carlsbad and stuff when she got together with the mariachis and the different bands in town.
Sure, sure.
And her and I did a lot of practicing while we picked cotton in Carlsbad.
Right, right. Yeah, you hear a little Spanish in some of your tunes, so that's nice.
Yes.
You really mix it up. And do you still perform? Are you doing concerts still?
No, I'm semi-retired.
Okay.
The performances are a big load.
Sure, yeah.
Very stressful. So
a lot of work.
I decided that was enough.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you're a Native American Music Award winner. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes, yes. Thank you. Tell us about your first NAMI and how did that feel?
Well, my first NAMI was in 2004. For Best Female Artist.
Right. And
that year in 2004, they skipped the NAMIs because they lost the place where they were having it. And they didn't have a place to, you know, to do it that year. So they skipped over to 2005.
Okay.
And so that year they scheduled the NAMIs at in Hollywood, Florida at the Res there.
Oh, wow.
And so I went, and it was, what was hard was, I mean, I was, when I heard my name, because we didn't get to perform, or
oh.
We didn't get to go on stage and get our awards.
Sure.
And stuff. They just announced the winners over the intercom and told us to go backstage after the show to
okay.
get our
your stuff.
But, I mean, I was still, I could not believe
that. Oh, sure.
That the people had voted for me for best female artist. I was shaking. I was so
Yeah.
I got my vote.
So you didn't get to perform. How many awards have you won so far from them?
I did get 4 Nammys.
Nice, and, nice.
I did get 1 Native E. That was one show that they did. I got best remake for my version of Summertime in that. I think that was on America CD.
Oh, wow.
And
cool.
Then I got 2 best indigenous from ISMA. And I got 3 from ISMA, actually.
Nice, nice.
The Indian Summer Music Awards that
had Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, you do a great job mixing up your music. Do you write all your music?
Yes. Good. Yes. Yeah. I did have a partner help me in the beginning, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, you know, the two of us worked on Native Heartbeat and Lonely Warrior together.
Wow.
And we split up and he went on and I went on that way and continued my music.
Right on. Good job.
Do you ever write about being the first woman to ever work in commercial fishing boat in Kodiak, Alaska?
No, I never have. It's funny. And now that you mention, I'm going, that might have been fun music, you know.
I myself have had some commercial fisherman experience. I was a longshoreman for a while. Just curious to know, can you elaborate on any of your greenhorn days?
Oh, yeah. Boy, did they have fun, you know, with me, because I was the only woman out there in the fleet, you know.
And young.
And the only reason I got to go was because my then boyfriend, you know, fiance, he went fishing. And I kept asking him, how long are you going to be gone? And he'd just make some excuse and skip the subject and... He didn't tell me they were gone for months at a time.
Oh, no.
2 weeks, that's fine. I can handle that, you know.
Sure.
So when he came back from the first fishing, you know, season that he was doing, I told him, nope, I didn't sign up for this. I don't know anybody here. I'm on Kodiak Island. I don't know anyone. I go, and I'm going home.
Right. Thank you very much.
Yeah. He said, no. You know, next season you can go, you know, I'll send for you and you can go.
Sure. Interesting.
The next season came and he flew me out to Chignik, the village of Chignik. I don't know if you know where that is, Mm-mm. Gary. Heading out towards the Aleutians from, you know, Kodiak. Then it goes on down to the Aleutians.
Okay.
So he flew me out there and that was a fun experience. In the small plane.
Oh, wow.
Landing on pontoons and the ocean. But, you know, it was quite the experience.
Sure.
And I didn't know it, but Kodiak Island had a lottery going as to how long this little Indian woman was going to last.
Oh, wow.
Oh, man.
I never got to see it, and I didn't hear about it till after I got off the boat 2 years later, you know.
Oh, wow.
But I showed them.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah. And
you're a drum maker. Tell us a little bit about drum making. What was your favorite drum to make, and what was your experience?
Well, the call of the drum started coming in 1986.
Okay.
I was in corporate. You know, I got into the escrow and title insurance business, mm-hmm. and I had worked my way up from delivery girl to escrow officer, you know, and I'd been in the business for almost 20 years.
Sure.
When I decided I was tired of it, and they didn't pay women what they were paying the men.
Mm-hmm.
Even delivery part-time guys were getting paid more than I was, and I'd been there, you know, for mm-hmm. years. So I decided, I'm going to quit, you know, I'm going to go back to school and,
sure.
you know, be able to really get a degree or something. But then the Alaska fever hit me, and that went by the way. But when I came back in 1980, you know, I went back into the escrow business.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1986, all of a sudden, you know, there's a knock, knock, knock.
Sure.
Yolanda.
The calling. Yeah.
Yolanda, they kept calling Yolanda. And they start telling me, you know, and I was speaking to, you know, spiritual leaders and psychics and stuff mm-hmm. back then. That was big in those days.
Yeah.
And everybody that I was talking to was telling me, they're telling me that you're not doing what you should be doing. You're not following your path, that you're a teacher, that you're a spiritual leader. I go, a teacher? I didn't even graduate. I didn't even go to school, you know, the college. All I did was graduate high school. And there's nothing for me to teach. Sure. So I just kept, no, you're crazy. Well, you don't say no to spirit.
Right.
Let me tell you, you do not say no to spirit.
Exactly.
So I got hit with a 2x4. Bam. I got poisoned.
Yeah.
In 1989. And I went down. I went to death's door.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And it was so bad, guys. I was asking, you know, I was asking Great Spirit, please just take me. I can't stand this pain anymore. It was so bad.
Wow.
And I lost most of my hair. I lost the use of my hands. They were like this. I couldn't open them or close them. I mean, I was a mess. I was mm-hmm. in a wheelchair. Couldn't, you know, barely walk and stuff. And when I was really pleading to just take me. And I had already made a will out for who in my family I wanted to raise my daughter. Because back then she was 8 years old then.
Okay.
You know, sure. And I had a vision. A vision came to me that night. And, you know, I don't remember everything that we talked about, but, you know, the angel or whatever it was,
sure,
was there in front of me and at the foot of my bed. And I just, you know, again, the message, you're yep. not doing.
Took the you challenge.
Mm-hmm. Who you are.
Right.
You are saying no to spirit, and you do not say no to spirit.
Yeah.
Then I go, okay, I'm sorry. I surrender. You right. know, I just said, I surrender. I'll do whatever spirit says. But I expect guidance.
Sure.
You know. So then I started to get a little better, and I went into healing myself with herbs because I wouldn't go in the hospital. I knew if I went in the hospital, I wasn't going to come out. And I healed myself. And that part of that healing was me starting to make drums. And that helped my hands come back, you know.
Oh, wow.
And it took me 10 years before I said, I'm starting to feel, you know, like myself. But it was 15 years before I said, I think I'm back. And by then, I've got drums, you know, coming sure. out. People were knocking at my door. Are you the drum woman? I go, yeah.
That's what they say.
That's what they would say to me. I think you have my drum in there. And they would look in my house.
Oh,
I go,
cool.
I have some drums. Okay, come on, go find. And I, like, funny thing, I always knew what drum was theirs.
Oh, wow, incredible. Nice.
Yeah, I always knew. And it just kept building. And it was the drum that brought my music out back, you know, back mm-hmm. out. And I went through a lot coming out with the drums. When Spirit said, you know, it's time for the drums to come out, you have to bring them out. I kept saying, I don't want to. I in my DNA, I knew I was going to face, you know, consequences.
Sure.
I didn't know anything about the tribes or the drums or anything, but I just had this feeling in my heart and my soul that there was going to be trouble with a woman making drums,
right.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I did, from the very first powwow that I did there in Turlock, California, that was just up the road from where I lived. You know, went to the show and I was still very sick. So my sisters went with me and set up my booth for me and stuff. And of course, all the young bucks see the drums. I mean, it's like magnets, you know. So they went, oh, drums, can we play them? Yeah, go ahead, you know. So they start playing. And yeah. I'm going, oh, I'm trying to be incognito, and here they are.
Right.
So the powwow takes off, and so they start putting the drums back, you know.
How cool.
Couple of them come over to me and they go, wow, these are nice drums. Where do you get them? And I just go, I make them.
Right on.
You make them? You make these drums? Yes. And they look at each other and they go, oh, okay. So they hand me the drums and I watch them and they go around the gym all the way to the back where the elders are sitting. And I see them pointing in my direction and talking to them.
Here they come.
Nice. And not 10 minutes later, here come three elders. You know, they get up and they come around the wall in the gym and over to my booth. And they stop and they pick up the drums. You know, they're looking at them and tapping them. And then one of them approaches me and he says, where do you get these drums? I said, I make them. And he looks at me and says, who gave you permission?
Oh, my.
And I go like this.
Yeah.
And if you can tell me of a higher power that can tell me I'm not supposed to do this, I'll stop.
Oh.
Yeah.
And he just takes a step back, you know, and he looks down at the drum and he's standing there. And I can see things. I mean, I see his aura just
brewing.
To me, it was like an infinity that he stood there, but it probably was like a minute. And then he finally looks up at me and he says, nice drums.
Right on.
The other two just look at him and they put the drums back and they walk back to where they were sitting. And that was the beginning of the coming out of the drum. And I had to do that for 4 years every time I did a new powwow.
Nice story. Good story.
And your book, when did you know that you wanted to share your story? And what is the book about, really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, when I was doing my circles and people would come visit and we'd start talking and they start asking me questions, and I'd remember something, a story, so I'd share this story, and everybody's going, oh my God, you need to write a book. I mean, I must have gone through 10 years of people saying that. You need to write a book. You know? And, you know, the older I got, the more I'm thinking, I really need to. And seeing, you know, what's happening in the world and how empowered we all feel, you know, most of the time and all that. And so, and then it got to be spirit telling me, you need to ride your bike. You know, so when I moved from here and moved east, I landed in Maryland. My daughter got pregnant with my first grandchild, and I was there for his birth. And I said, okay, my grandkids are the top important thing in my life now. Mm-hmm. And they are going to get to know their grandmother. They're going to get to know Nana, who I am, you know. And I did. I went, and I was there for almost 8 years. My grandson was born, and then my granddaughter came after that. My grandson is now 8, and my granddaughter just turned 3. And they both love me and call me, and Nana, when are you coming, you know? So I felt like I had completed there with them.
Mm-hmm.
But while I was there is when I decided, okay, I need to start this. And what really and who really helped me to get it started was this young man that contacted me. He has a newspaper online. And he was doing a story on Native American spiritual people. And somehow somebody mentioned my name, and so he contacted me. and wanted to do an interview for the newspaper. I said, sure, you know.
Yeah.
So we did the interview, and, you know, he was asking me questions, so I was telling him all this stuff, what I've done and why I feel this way and why I believe that way. And, you know, afterwards, he's going, wow. Have you ever written a book?
Again.
Have you ever thought of writing a book? You know, I go, yes.
A couple times.
I go, I don't know how to get started. I said, every time I attempt to start, I can't. He says, you know what? He says, I'm going to help you. I'll call you once a week in the morning, because he was in California and I was in Maryland. So it was 3-hour difference. He says, I'll call you once a week. And I'll ask you questions and I'll type it up. You just talk. Don't worry about anything.
Wow.
And we did that for almost 2 years.
Interesting.
And so when we felt that, okay, I think we're done.
Sure.
You know, you got to take it from here.
Uh-huh.
So what I did was print out that outline and just started, and I got going, because the questions were there. And I just gave him a little blurb about it, you know, but that little blurb got me going, remembering things, remembering stories, remembering situations and everything. So, yeah, Daniel was, he's my hero.
Right on. He brought you to.
He wouldn't pay him, you know, he wouldn't take any money. But
I like the story. He brought you to the complete circle.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
Right on. Yolanda, it's a great story. Do you have any advice for new and upcoming entrepreneurs breaking into the business?
Well, all I can tell you is the way I did it.
Mm-hmm.
My life was created on, if I don't go for it, if I don't attempt something, I don't say try, because if you try, you're not doing. If you don't attempt something that you feel that you want to check out and go for, you know, follow your passion.
Yes.
Always. Even as scary as it is, you know, follow your passion. Spirit is always with you. And spirit will support you one way or another.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Salute. Good words. Today we're speaking with Yolanda Martinez, entrepreneur and author. Her new book is now available, Following Earth, Mother's Heartbeat, The Memoirs of Yolanda. You can find out all about Yolanda on her website, on the web at yolandasdrums.com, or visit Indigenous in Music and Arts to find out even more. Yolanda, thank you for stopping by today and introducing yourself to us all. I'm happy to have you on the show, and we'll get you back again soon.
It was a pleasure and an honor to have you here today. Thank you.
Thank you, thank you.
Yes.
Many blessings.
Thank you for tuning in to Indigenous in the News and supporting us and our entrepreneurs. Indigenous in the News has been produced by Larry Kay. Our engineer is Paul Salvatore. Our theme music is composed by Lenny Long. Today's show has been recorded at the Two Buffalo Studios in Bradenton, Florida. National Native News is provided by Native Voice One with Antonio Gonzalez. Come visit us at indigenousinmusicandarts.org to hear all of our past shows and learn all about our great programs that we provide. Until next time, from all of us here at Indigenous in the News, have yourself a wonderful week and safe journeys. Indigenous in the News is a production of Indigenous in Music and Arts.
You're listening to Fresh Air.